Good evening. We are seeing now the meaning of a way of life, a spiritual way of life, an infinite way of life, a mystical way of life. And this way of life is the direct opposite of the material way of life, or even what we might call the human way of life. In this material or human way of life, I am acted upon. In other words, I may have a good experience because somebody is good to me. I may have a bad experience because somebody is bad to me. I may have a healthy experience because the weather or the climate suits me. I may have an unhealthy experience because the weather or the climate or the food does not agree with me. I may be prosperous because I am in a prosperous country or a prosperous part of the country or a prosperous industry. I may not be prosperous because my particular industry is no longer prosperous, or because the part of the country where I live and have my business is having a recession, or even the whole country is having a recession. We may even have a war and all of our people begin to prosper, and then the other part of our people begin to get killed and wounded and otherwise distressed. Now, this is the material or human way of life in which we are acted upon, and which we do not govern or control, because somebody's always doing it to us. Somebody is, or something is. Now, in the spiritual way of life, you have the opposite of this. You are not at the mercy of man whose breath is in his nostril. You are not under the control of people, circumstances, or conditions, but on the contrary, you set the stage for your own experience. You are at all times in control of the situations that govern your experience. Now, I described this the other evening in its relationship to supply. Once you understand the spiritual way of life, it would be impossible to lack. It would be impossible because infinity is the measure of your supply, and there isn't anyone that can give it to you, and there isn't anyone that can take it from you. It is something that you set in motion yourself by attunement to the spiritual law of supply. Now, the first requirement is that you must know what the spiritual law of supply is. And you learn either through meditation, in which it's revealed to you, or you learn it from the experience of those who have discovered it and who present it to you. The secret of the law of supply spiritually is in the passage, "What have you in your house?" What have you now in your house? And then you begin to search your own consciousness for what you have at this moment, and then you begin to pour, as the poor widow poured the few drops of oil that she had, and then found that the cruse did not run dry. So it is that the moment you begin to pour out of what you have in the house, well, the moment you withdraw your attention from your usual means of supply, the outward source of supply, begin to take your attention from that world and begin, what have I in the house? House meaning consciousness. What have I in my consciousness? I and my Father are one. Son, thou art ever with me. All that I have is thine. Therefore, I do have something in my consciousness. I do have something that has been given me of God. I do possess. What is it? What am I withholding? What am I holding back? What is it that I have that I'm ignorant of? What is it that I'm not pouring? Now here I am, my consciousness is infinite because it's one with God. Because I am one with God, all that the Father hath is mine. Now I have infinity, but I am not pouring forth all that I should. Now, somehow, I am damming up my supply. I'm holding it back and not letting it flow. It has nothing to do with anyone outside of me. No one is giving me and no one is withholding from me, because God is the source of my being. God is the source of my supply. God is even the measure of my supply, and that is why my measure is infinity itself. And so it is that I begin. And as I brought out the other evening, I may find that I have some clothing that I can share. I may find I have some food or some service. And then, of course, I realize that the greatest meaning to this whole experience of supply is spiritual. Have I become a son of God? Because if I have become a son of God, then I'm heir, joint heir, to all of the riches. But have I become a son of God, or am I still that natural man that receiveth not the things of God? How do I know whether I am the child of God? Well, of course, the biggest guide I have is the teaching of Christ Jesus. Am I fulfilling the law of sonship? What is the law of sonship? According to the Master, it is that I pray for my enemies, that I pray for those who despitefully use me, that I forgive, 70 times 7. That I serve, inasmuch as ye have done it unto the least of these my brethren, ye have done it unto me. I must serve, I must help, not only my family, not only my friends, not only those of my own religious family, but impartially, I must find a way not only to educate my children, but to help educate the children of those who cannot afford that education. I must not only clothe my children, I must find a way to help in the clothing of those children whose parents have not awakened yet to their true identity. From me must pour forth supply. I must give it in the mundane things of life, and I must give it in the more spiritual things, the prayers, the prayers for the enemy, the forgiveness of those who offend. I must pray without ceasing. I must abide in the Word and let the Word abide in me. I must fulfill all that the Master reveals constitutes the Son of God, the Christ of God. If I am to declare myself to be the Son of God or Christ of God, I must act like it. I must not take the name, I must not wear the garment, and then not fulfill it. This is hypocrisy. This is spiritual wickedness in high places. If I call myself the Son of God, I must set aside my time for the practice of forgiveness, of praying for the enemy, of resisting not evil, of not taking up the sword, of not retaliating, of not using an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. All right. This is the beginning then. If I, knowing that the law of supply is outgiving, outpouring, expressing, then I govern my own supply. It is not governed by what anyone wants to give me or what anyone wants to withhold from me. It is not governed by what the times are or the tides. It is governed purely by my own degree of givingness. Therefore, no longer is supply a problem. The only problem is, am I sufficiently expressing supply, letting supply flow through me? Therefore, I am always in the saddle on the subject of supply. And when I wish to increase it, I have to increase the measure, the degree of my outflow of prayer, service, so forth. So it is then that my entire experience on the spiritual path depends not on you in your relationship to me. I'm speaking you in the sense of all the world out there. But on my relationship to you, not only you who are in this room, but more especially you who are out here anywhere and everywhere in this world. And so let me explain this to you. I am sitting up here and looking out at you in this room and then all you out there in the world. And I must say this to you, that my demonstration of harmony depends on what I am seeing out there. It doesn't depend on you. It doesn't depend on your attitude to me. It doesn't depend on whether you like me or believe me. It doesn't depend on whether you ever know me. It depends on my attitude to you. Now, either through spiritual revelation or through following the teaching of those who have had spiritual revelation, you come to know this. The harmony of my life depends on my oneness or at-one-ment with the source of life, or the harmony of my life's experience depends upon my obedience to spiritual law. The harmony of my life depends on my oneness with the source of all being and the obedience to its laws. All right, it all has its foundation in this statement, ye shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free. Now, this is the truth. I'm sitting up here and I'm looking out there, and the truth is that you are the Christ or Son of God. You are spiritual. The truth is that I, remember, I'm not speaking about to you, I'm not saying what you should do, I'm telling you now what I must do if I would have harmony in my life. You'll find sooner or later that you must do it too if you want harmony in your life. I must acknowledge no man on earth to be my father. And by doing this, I do away with my nationalism, I do away with my religious fanaticism, bigotry, bias, prejudice, because there is but one Father. This is the truth. There is but one Father, and this Father is Spirit. And we are the offspring of Spirit, not of man. Man is not a creator. God is the creative principle of all life. God is the source of all life. God is the principle of life. Therefore, God is the only Father. If God is the only Father, not if, since God is the only Father, we are brethren. We are brothers and sisters. Like it or not like it, that's the truth. Whether we're Jew or Gentile, Protestant or Catholic, white or black, Oriental or Occidental, like it or not like it, the truth is that there is but one Father, and that Father is Spirit. And we are the offspring of that Father. Now, in the moment that I make this agreement, God is your Father and my Father, and we are brethren, we are brothers and sisters, we are of one spiritual household, we are of the family of God. Whether or not I say it in words, the fact is that I now love you. I can't help it. You are all offspring of the same parent that I have. We are all one family. This love isn't a personal one. And it's not a sensual one. It is an absolutely spiritual agreement that we are brothers and sisters, that we are one, and that all that my Father hath is yours, the same as all that my Father hath is mine, because it's the same Father speaking to the same Son, which you are and which I am. And the moment I sit up here and see that this is your relationship, do you not realize that there is a bond between us? I didn't establish that bond, nor did you. God established that bond, but now I recognize it and have brought myself into obedience to it and to oneness with it, and now this law of the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man is in operation in my life. And by my perceiving this, not only my attitude to you changes, your attitude to me. And remember, I'm not only speaking of you in this room, I'm speaking of everyone out in this world, so that even when I go out into the world of strangers, into the hotels, into the airfields, into the publishing market, anywhere in the business world or any other, just think what happens in my recognition that all of these are offspring of God, my brothers and my sisters, and I have this feeling toward them. Can you not see what feeling must come back to me? It's better than an insurance policy, I promise you. Much better. Because the love that is poured out must come back. It has to. It's continuously like bread cast upon the waters. It goes out, it's true, but the next tide brings it back. And so it is that this love that is poured out, and see the nature of this love. It's a love that is truth, really. This truth that I'm pouring out in the recognition of you as my brother, my sister, children of my father, it compels me to treat you honorably. It compels me not to act toward you in any manner that I wouldn't act to a member of my household. It compels me because you are of my household. The fact that we live under different roofs has nothing to do with it. Lots of my family live under different roofs. It doesn't change our relationship. Now, this very love that I'm pouring out, this very truth of being, you can feel. And the reason you can feel it is this. There is only one mind. And you see, whatever of truth is taking place in my mind, you feel. That is how it is that you can have healing through a practitioner. Whatever truth the practitioner knows, the patient responds to. The practitioner doesn't have to project this thought to a patient. That was the old-fashioned method of treatment. It has no place anymore in spiritual work. As long as I know that I and the Father are one, and that I am at one with God and all that the Father hath is mine, anyone who has reached out to me for help receives the power of that truth. Why? Because it took place in the one mind. We are not separate minds. There is only one mind. And every bit of truth that permeates my being is at the same moment permeating the being of all who are receptive. And therefore, the love that I pour out is poured back to me. Let me show you a concrete illustration of this. This has taken place twice in our classwork. After a lesson of this nature, one of our students, a girl, left the classroom and went home on a bus. And on this bus, there was a man very intoxicated, very boisterous, and using unseemly language. And this student sat quietly, realizing the essence of this lesson, that there is only one of us, that there is only one God, one principle, that we are all of one household, and so forth, and found her peace. And very soon this man quieted down, and then when he went to leave the bus, he stopped by this girl, touched her on the shoulder, and said, "Thank you for praying for me. I will never drink again." Another experience was a girl leaving the class one night that went down to the coffee shop in the hotel and found a similar experience and acted in the same way. And this man came up to her and said, "Would you please talk to me about God?" And she talked to him about God for a half hour. And he left just as sober as a judge. If judges are sober, I guess they are sometimes. But the point is, you see, that whatever of truth, spiritual truth, there is operating in my consciousness is felt by you. Because we are only one mind. We are together in one place of one mind. We are all in one consciousness. And more especially is this true when we've brought ourselves together. Now, my attitude then toward this world is the attitude that the world pays back to me. Now, I'm not speaking of this in any human sense, that if I'm a good man, the world will be good to me. We've all seen that that doesn't operate. We've all seen many times how good we have been to certain people and then found that knife right down our back to the hilt. There's any of us here that hadn't had that experience. So it would be folly to say to you that you be good to others and they'll be good to you. That's a dream that many people have waked up from with that knife. No, I don't say be good to anyone and they'll be good to you. I'm not saying that as you are to others, so they will be to you. I'm saying the truth that you know is what will return to you. The truth that you know. And if you know this truth, that God is the only Father, the only cause and creative principle, and we are brothers and sisters, and this compels me to act toward this world with justice, kindness, benevolence, with integrity, then you can be assured of this, that the very truth that I am knowing about you, you respond to. And it would make no difference if some individual among you didn't. I'm speaking broadly on the sense of my entire life. There may still come into my experience a Judas here and there, or a denying Peter. That doesn't change, really, the life experience, because we can take a little exception here and there without a great deal of injury. No. You see, then, that it is the way in which I am seeing, through knowing the truth, that brings back my experience. Now let me show you this another step. In the human way of life, and probably as some of you may have been taught in psychology, people are made up of good and evil. And so they do good and they do evil. Well, of course, that isn't true. It never was true. The only truth about it is that that is what man has created in his dream. And as long as he believes that, that's what happens to him. In accordance with your faith, so be it unto you. And as long as you believe that men are good and evil, or that some are good and some are evil, or that they're all made up of some good and some evil, that's exactly what is going to be measured back to you. Your own belief is going to come back to you. On the other hand, should you awaken to this truth that there is no evil in anyone, all evil is an activity of the carnal mind. It is not of man, because you must remember we've already established who you are. Since there is only one Father, you're the child of that Father. You are heir of God, joint heir. You are the very Christ of God. We know now who you are. Therefore, any evil, sin, disease, death, lack, old age, anything you want to call it, that appears to be in any one or more of you, this I recognize to be a delusion of the senses. An illusory picture that is being presented to me by the carnal mind. I'm no more fooled by it than I am fooled by an ocean in the middle of the desert. or by the sky that sits on the mountaintop but doesn't. I am not fooled by appearances because the truth has been revealed to me of your true identity. So therefore, when an appearance of discord, of sin, false appetite, disease, old age, death, any such appearance that presents itself to me, I must know the truth. God is not the author of sin, disease, or death. God is not in the whirlwind. God is not in the evils of the human world. God is in the still small voice that is in the midst of you. And therefore, I stop malpracticing you. Now remember that as a human being, my whole life is devoted to malpracticing you. I'm seeing you sick, or I'm seeing you sinful, or I'm seeing you old, or I'm seeing you dying. And you see, that's mental malpractice. Nothing more, nothing less. And every one of us is guilty of that. And every one of us is guilty to some degree. The thing that frees us from the effects of malpractice is to stop malpracticing. There is no other way to be freed of the effects of malpractice than to stop malpracticing. And therefore, the moment that I loose you and let you go, the moment that I say to you, neither do I judge thee, thy sins be forgiven thee, the moment that I understand that God is your Father, and you're as pure as your Father, for you are of the same life, mind, and substance, I have released you from malpractice. And I have released myself from being a malpracticer. And now, since I'm not pouring out malpractice, none can come back to me because my whole experience is made up of what I pour out. And if I know the truth must make me free. And if I know the truth about you, that truth makes me free because there's only one of us. There's only one life, one mind, one soul. And the truth that I know about you is the truth that makes me free. The moment I stop malpracticing, I stop drawing malpractice unto myself. In other words, to be free, I must free you. I can never be free while I'm holding anyone in bondage. Never, never. The spiritual law is that you must loose him and let him go. The spiritual law is that you must forgive 70 times 7. The spiritual law is that you must behold God as the life of individual man. You must have spiritual discernment, the same spiritual discernment that Peter had when he could say to the Master, "Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God." Unless you are looking out at this world and saying, "Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God," and any evil that I see, hear, taste, touch, or smell is of the carnal mind. It has nothing to do with you. It has to do only with that Adamic belief in two powers. Now you can see that the measure of your outpouring is the measure of your incoming. It is just the same as the law of supply. This is the same law of supply at all other levels of life. Unless you have had the experience of doing some healing work, You cannot comprehend what I'm saying to you, at least not fully. If you once have the experience of doing healing work, this will open up to you in 5 minutes. Watch it now. An individual comes to a practitioner, and more especially a practitioner of a spiritual teaching, and asks for help. Now, it may be that in them there is some sin, false appetite, criticism, judgment, condemnation. In them there is some manifestation of disease. But they have come now to the office of the spiritual practitioner or to the consciousness. They may do it by telephone or mail. But they have brought themselves to the consciousness of the practitioner. And now watch what happens in this practitioner's consciousness. The request is made for help. The practitioner immediately lets thought go in the direction of God. God is spirit. God is the spirit in man. God is life. God is the life of man. God is soul. God is the soul of man. God is the source of all supply. God is the supply of all man. In fact, God constitutes man's being. Even your body is the temple of the living God. Know ye not that ye are the temple of God? Even your body is the temple of God. God is perfect, and the offspring of God is very God expressed. Just as a beam of sunlight is really the sun itself in an individual expression or form. The quality of a beam of sunlight is the same quality of the sun itself, because it is the sun itself expressed. Therefore, all that God is, man is. All that the Father hath, man hath. And nothing else. In fact, thou seest me, thou seest the Father that sent me. Thou seest man, thou seest the creative principle, because the creative principle, which is God, is expressed as man. Now, all of a sudden, that person begins to feel a burden lift. First, perhaps, in the mind, and secondarily in the body. There is a release or a relief. And I can tell you what it is. The universal malpractice has been stopped. That universal malpractice that said you are a mortal, conceived in sin, brought forth in iniquity. You're a mortal who is sinning. You're a mortal who has guilt on your shoulder of omission or commission. This is the universal malpractice that's upon every human being. You know it as well as I do, that in your experience you've had this feeling over and over again of being unworthy. I have read that so many times in my letters, that I'm not worthy of God's grace, that I know it now by heart. I can recite it. It isn't true. It isn't true that no one is unworthy. No one is unworthy. It couldn't be. God wouldn't let you live if you were unworthy. No one is unworthy, and no one has in them any iniquity. You remember the statement of Paul? I know that I'm not perfect, but on the other hand, I know I'm not sinning. And yet I feel in me a sense of sin. Well, so it is with every one of us. There is a universal sense of sin in all of us, because we know that in our humanhood, we have never lived up to the full measure of our Christhood. No one ever has. No one ever can. This is no claim that any human being is or ever was perfect. This is the truth about you, and you are perfect. You have never been a fallen man. I'm so happy to see that in one of the hymns in your own hymn book. The fabled fall of man, it says. The fabled fall of man. Of course, there never was a fall of man. How could God's man fall? How could God let his man fall? And all of this fall that you've been thinking about is this dream of mortal existence, which has come about by ascribing to yourself the sins of the carnal mind, which aren't your sins at all. Now, the moment the practitioner recognizes this, they break the universal malpractice. Let me illustrate it in another way. Let us suppose this is the flu season. They have them, those seasons, and 10, 25, 100, 1,000 people come down with flu. They all decided to sin and get the flu? Of course not. You know that the flu doesn't come because of any personal sins. It is a universal malpractice brought about by the belief in infection and contagion and the germ theory. It's a universal belief. It's a universal malpractice. That's all it is. So whether one individual gets the flu or 1,000 in the city, it should not be difficult for you to meet it, for the individuals and for your whole community, if only you recognize it as a universal malpractice. And then drop it, because a universal malpractice is not authored by God, has no law of God to support it, and you do not have to fight it. You see, in this message of the infinite way, our entire healing work is done by not taking up the sword. Our entire healing work is done by not using truth over error, by not trying to have God heal a disease. Our entire healing work is done by a recognition of the truth. And the truth is that that which is not of God has no law to sustain it. Therefore, you don't have to fight it. You only have to recognize it. And the moment you recognize that an epidemic of any nature is but a universal malpractice, you don't have to fight it anymore. It hasn't any power. If God didn't empower it, it hasn't any power. The master said to Pilate, "Thou couldst have no power over me. With all your temporal power, you could have no power over me." And if the master hadn't consented to crucifixion, I can assure you Pilate would never have been able to accomplish it. The master had to consent to it and had to believe that it was going to be for the good of mankind. Now, when you know this truth of true identity, think of yourself being up here on a platform or somewhere separate from mankind and looking out at them. And then realize you're looking out at yourself, at your divine selfhood made manifest as a million other people. The same God being manifested as a million or a billion people, and act that way toward them, not holding them in condemnation for their human faults, for that which they can't help until they awaken to their true identity, any more than you or I can help our human faults until we awaken to our true identity. We can try psychologically to be better, and we may succeed for a short time, until we repress our other side enough to make it come forth as an explosion, and we'll be worse than we were before. I know this from experience, because before this first experience came to me, I knew all of my faults, and I also knew how I would like to be without those faults, and I knew, and I know full well, how I never succeeded in overcoming them. And then when this experience came upon me, those faults disappeared of their own, whatever the nature of this Christ was, they disappeared, the major ones at least. I still have plenty of faults my family could testify to, but at least they are not the major ones, and they're sufferable anyhow. Now, the point is that you can't be any more loving than you are. You can't be any more just or merciful or philanthropic. You can't violate your own nature. But in the moment that you begin to know the truth, you break that human malpractice, Antichrist, and you find that your nature changes. Your nature changes in proportion as you see my true nature. When you can look at me not as a human being, not as a person with a past or a present or a future, look at me in the same way that I am looking at you and describing you. God is your Father. You are wholly spiritual in nature. Perfection constitutes your being. Infinity is the measure of your supply of good. Truth is the law of life unto you. Immortality is your lifespan. As I begin to see you that way, I break the malpractice that has been upon me and upon you. And as you begin to perceive this world in that way, you break the malpractice that has been upon you by breaking that malpractice of others. Now, see the point that I'm making, that on the spiritual path, it isn't life that is going to, I mean this human life, that is going to affect you. It is not people who are going to determine whether you're happy or unhappy or prosperous or not prosperous. It is you who are going to determine it. You don't have to forsake your families. All of this takes place up in your consciousness. You may be living in an atmosphere of opposition to this truth. If so, you don't ever have to voice it. You don't have to let anyone know that you're thinking this truth. Outwardly, you can conform. Suffer to be so now is one thing, or render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's. You can say anything you want with your lips. It's what is taking place in your consciousness. I remember years ago when my life was entirely that of a practitioner in an office, and occasionally some of us would come down with a cold in winter or some other minor ailment. And then it just seemed that the natural practice was to stay home and not let the patients know you were human. Well, you know, this is ridiculous. And I not only went to my office on those occasions, but one day I was first reader in a Christian Science church, and I got up on the platform with two handkerchiefs in my hand. But I must tell you that I was healed during that service. And when I come off and I was told, oh, how wonderful that was, how wonderful. If there's 200 of you out there seeing me this way and giving me treatments, it has to work. And if you weren't giving me treatments, what were you doing out there? All right, then. This cold, then, is a malpractice, isn't it? That's all I'm suffering from, is a malpractice. And one with God is a majority. 200 ought to be 200 majorities. Therefore, to know the truth that this is but a malpractice and not the presence or power of God must free me. But do you see that in freeing me, it frees you too? Because a universal truth, a truth which you know, frees you. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free, even if the truth you're knowing is the truth about me. Any truth that you know. And that is why, when we pray for others, we no longer have to pray for ourselves. You reach a place where you would no more think of praying for yourself or doing or do meditation or spiritual work for yourself. It just never enters your mind. But why? Well, what is the difference between knowing the truth about you and knowing the truth about me? It's the same truth, and we're the same being, the same selfhood. So knowing the truth is all that's necessary, regardless of whether you're knowing it about the human race, or even the animal world, or the bird world, the fish world. It is for this reason that in my own work, I'm called on very often by students and their families to help with their dogs or cats or birds, and sometimes someone is surprised that I'm not too busy to do it. But what they don't understand is that it's just knowing the truth. Now, what difference whether a bird benefits by it, or a cat or a dog? In the end, I'm the one who's really going to get the most benefit from it, because that knowing of the truth is elevating me in consciousness above this picture. And the major truth of all is, break the malpractice, break the antichrist that is holding man in bondage, and nothing else is holding him in bondage. Don't ever believe that man is held in bondage by people. Don't ever believe that man is held in bondage by poverty or by disease. These are the effects, and that is why it says in Scripture, lay the axe at the root of the tree. Don't start picking off branches. The minute you heal a person of a headache, sure in fate they'll turn up with a footache or a heartache. Heal them of a heartache, and the next thing you know, it'll be the liver or the lungs or the kidneys. It's nonsense to heal people of disease. Remove from them the malpractice of this universal belief in two powers. Remove from them this malpractice of the belief that they're human beings. That's what you have to do. And then you find that they may have a half a dozen diseases, and the whole half a dozen move out at one time, or they may move out one at a time or two at a time. But watch them over the years, and you'll see how gradually the dozen or so problems that we have as we come to this work gradually fade out until we look back over a few years and realize that none of those things have touched me for a long, long time. But you see, the thing is that it's all up to you. It's all up to me. It is the degree of the knowing of the truth that I do that sets me free, even when it's the truth about you. It is breaking this malpractice. Now, do not think for a moment that if I hold someone in bondage, that I myself am going to be left free. That's utter nonsense. As ye sow, so shall ye reap, is a law that cannot be broken. The only way to stop erroneous reaping is to stop erroneous sowing. And the only place that erroneous sowing takes place is up here, in consciousness, in thought. It is determined by what I am willing to see out here. Either I am willing to spiritually discern that you are the Christ, or I'm going to judge by human appearances and say, well, you're the child of Jones, Brown, or Smith. It's up to me. Choose ye this day whom you will serve, truth or error, spiritual truth or human knowledge. Now, if you choose spiritual wisdom, you begin at any instant that you like, and this instant is as good as any other, to take the attitude of sitting back here and looking out at this world and saying, thank God I know thee now who thou art. Thou art the very Christ of God, the Son of God. Thank God I know thee who thou art. Son of the Most High. Offspring of God, heir of God, joint heir with all of us to the spiritual kingdom. Son, thou art ever with God, and all that God has is thine. This earth is the Lord's, and the fullness thereof, and it belongs to each and every one of you. Begin. Break the malpractice. Break this antichrist. And begin to behold the Christ. Know the truth. And at the same time, be sure that you don't put your head in the ground and say there is no evil. Remember that all evil is an activity of the carnal mind, an activity of malpractice or antichrist. But because it isn't of God, you don't have to fight it. Do not fight error. Do not try to overcome error. You can't any more than you can overcome 2 times 2 is 5. Don't battle 2 times 2 is 5. Just quietly know the truth. 2 times 2 is 4. Don't argue about it. Don't fight it. Don't discuss it. There's nothing to discuss about 2 times 2. It's 4, and that's all that's to it. And don't be interested in anybody's opinion. And I can assure you there's nothing to discuss about truth. The discussion of truth is an utter waste of time, because there's nothing to be discussed. You are the Christ of being, and that's all that's to it. Anybody wants to discuss that with you, let them go home and discuss it with themselves. Don't waste time. The truth is that all evil is impersonal. It is a universal belief in two powers. It is a universal malpractice or antichrist. There's no use discussing that. That's truth. Discussing it won't change it. It may make you doubt it in the end. But holding to it, abiding in it, and proving it, this is the whole story. And that is why, when this truth is presented to you, be very careful that you don't present it to anyone else. Be very careful that you keep it locked up inside of you as a very sacred secret until you can demonstrate it. Because if you go around talking about this, discussing it, somebody's going to call you bluff and say, prove it. And then you'll have to be like the man who said, oh, no, I teach truth, but I don't heal. Now, you know, that can't be. Not any more than an airplane instructor can instruct if he can't pilot. At least you wouldn't want him to instruct you if you felt that he couldn't pilot. So it is. Truth is not subject to discussion. There are certain laws of truth that have been laid down by the mystics who have been God-inspired, God-endowed. When you hear or read these truths, you either know that it is truth or you're not ready for it. If you're not ready for it, keep on searching. But if you do feel the rightness of what you hear or what you read, keep it very sacred and very secret. Lock it up inside of yourself and practice it, because it is all taking place up here in your consciousness. Then, when you begin to witness the fruitage of it, and someone comes to you and says, what is truth? Then you can begin to explain what you yourself have learned and are demonstrating. But don't permit them to discuss it with you. Don't do that. I can assure you they'll prove to you that you're all wrong. There was a reason why the Master taught that you should not pray to be seen of men. When you pray, retire into the inner sanctuary of your own being. and do your praying in there, and let the truth, the evidence of your praying, be outwardly manifested. The Father that seeth in secret rewardeth thee openly. And if you do all of your treating in secret, all of your praying in secret, the results will appear outwardly. Then, when you are called upon to explain or teach, you can. But when you do, be so well prepared within yourself, be so convinced that you don't ever permit anyone to discuss it with you. Never. Never. Not in all my years in this work have I ever permitted anyone to discuss truth with me. I state it, and there it has to be. Take it or leave it. But don't discuss it with me. Don't argue it with me. I'm not interested. This is it, the way it has been revealed, and I can demonstrate it. And that's the end of it.